Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Jesmyn Ward is one of the most imaginative writers working today, and she has the awards to prove it. She's won 2 National Book Awards and received the prestigious MacArthur Genius Grant. Jesmyn is the youngest person to be awarded the Library of Congress Prize for American Fiction. She's released her first historical novel, Let Us Descend. It's a novel which Jesmyn almost didn't write, as you'll hear during our conversation. Fortunately for us, she did write it. Let Us Descend tells the story of Annis, an enslaved teenage girl who is sold by her white father after she is separated from her mother. Jesmyn weaves elements of Dante's Inferno, magical realism, and slave narratives to create a powerful story about rebirth and reclamation.
The name that she goes by in the book is Annis, and she is a young woman. At the beginning of the novel, we meet her. She is an enslaved person on a rice plantation with her mother, who is also enslaved. And, you know, she and her mother are very much a family. She loves her mother. Her mother loves her very much. And her mother is intent on teaching her what she knows of the world in order to help Annis better navigate it. And then they are separated because her mother is sold away from her. And that sort of begins Annis's own journey into greater and greater depths. She's later sold after her mother. And by sold, I mean that she is sold to a person who sells enslaved people. And that person walks her south to the slave markets, the slave pens of New Orleans, so that he can then sell her to a plantation owner in the South for more money. And so she takes a physical journey, but she also takes an emotional journey, you know, because losing her mother is this first step in this journey where she's dealing with really heavy grief. And she's trying to, I think, find her way towards a different tomorrow without her mother in it.
Yes, exactly. Very well said. And I found it very interesting that you said that you wanted to look at the hard truth from your past to explore what it would have been like to have little to no physical agency over her own body. One of the things that I really enjoyed about your writing, besides it being so poetic and beautifully written, was the physical descriptions. There were so many physical descriptions of what characters were doing, more so than I think I'd read in a lot of other novels. Can you talk about the physical agency and how you employed that in the book?
Yeah, it was important for me to sort of crowd the reader into Annis's experience, you know, by using lots and lots of sensory details. And so in a way, what I was attempting to do was I was sort of attempting to mimic this really powerful section in Colson Whitehead's novel, Underground Railroad. Mm. And so there's this point in Underground Railroad where Cora, who is an enslaved woman who is fleeing slavery and who is on the Underground Railroad, where she hides in an attic. And the writing in that section is so rooted in that experience. And there's so many like strong sensory details. And it's so powerful that I really felt like I was with Cora in that attic. And I realized when I was reading it that I had never read a novel about an enslaved person that rooted me so firmly in that experience, right? I mean, I felt Cora's fear. She's watching white supremacists gather in the park across from the house. You know, her awareness of how close and hot and dark the attic is, right? Her awareness of her like bodily functions. And so you're just so rooted in her experience. I wanted to use that as a model to sort of crowd my readers into that experience with Annis. So they're there with her in body every step of the way. I think we don't have many opportunities in literature to sink into the moment and to experience what it was like to have little to no physical agency. And in doing that, I found that there are other types of agency that Annis does have. And those other types of agencies, I think, allowed me as a writer, and definitely, I think, will allow the reader to sit with Annis in very uncomfortable, painful situations, right? So she has emotional agency. She has intellectual agency. She has spiritual agency. She has agency of the imagination. She has all these other different types of agency that she exercises freely. And I think discovering those was really important because they complicated her as a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, added more, made her more dimensional. Yeah, that's very true. I love that. And I love that phrase you used, crowd the reader, because, yeah, there's this sense of claustrophobia, especially early on in the narrative. Yeah. This is your first historical novel, so I'm guessing you must have done a lot of research. What were the most surprising things you learned?
I did. I read for around 2.5 years. I think one of the most surprising books that I read was a book called Slavery's Exiles by a writer named, or an academic named Sylvain Diouf. Mm-hmm. And that book was revelatory for me because it's all about Maroon communities and Maroons in the United States of America. So not in the Caribbean, but there were communities of formerly enslaved people that were established in like the swamps of Louisiana, that were also established in like in the Great Dismal Swamp, you know, in the Upper South. Sometimes when people escaped slavery, they would exist on the borderlands of the plantations. So in the wilderness, but on the border of the plantations. So that way they could still trade with people who were still enslaved and not be totally self-sufficient, but still be free. I didn't know that people who were still enslaved resisted by then taking things and giving them to the people who were living on the borderlands. I didn't know that when people were in the slave pens and in the slave markets, that they were given sort of scripts by the people who were selling them, they given scripts to follow. They were told that they were a prime hand or a cook or whatever. And they had to support that narrative and play along with it during the selling, which is terrible. But if the pretenses under which they were being sold were a lie, they would sometimes, you know, they would push back and say, no, I don't do this and I can't do this. And they would also advocate so that they wouldn't be split up from people that they loved, right? So they would enter into argument with the people attempting to buy them. And they would say, can you buy this person too? Can you please keep us together? And so there were all these ways that enslaved people resisted their enslavement that I had no idea of before I began researching. And I'm really grateful that writing this book led me to that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. You almost did not write Let Us Descend. If you don't mind my asking, why not?
Because my partner, the father of my children, passed away in early 2020, in January of 2020, from a respiratory illness. And so at that time, I was around 3 chapters in to Let Us Descend, and I had been struggling with it for a long time. Again, I think what was troubling me was that I couldn't get beyond that fact that Annis has little to no physical agency. And so my partner died, and I stopped writing. And I didn't write for around 6 months. To go so long without writing was strange for me, and I think I was so hopeless and so mired in despair that I couldn't. Because I think that all of my writing is born from a place of hope and born from a place of love. And my grief had just sort of driven any sense of hope out of me. And so I sat with that, and it felt really bad, and it hurt, and it felt painful to think that maybe I was done. But then this voice spoke up, and this voice said, my partner's name was Brandon, and I called him B. And so the voice said, the last thing that B would want is for his leaving to make you stop writing. And I was like, that's Very true. I mean, if that is true, then I have to get back to work. I wrote forward from chapter 3, and it was a very different process. And it helped me to understand what Annis was struggling with and what nearly every enslaved person that she meets, what they were struggling with, you know, because they were continuously, I think, wrestling with grief as they were separated from the people that they loved again and again and again and again. And then even when they created family or, you know, created new relationships and they were separated again. So they were sort of constantly, I feel like, struggling with grief and trying to retain a sense of hope. And then also trying to figure out how to create a new way of living without the person that they love. You know, that, I mean, that's the hard work of grief. And so they were constantly engaged in it. And it's helped me write my way back towards hope, I think.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
At one point in her journey, Annis is guided by a spirit named Mama Azza, which is her grandmother's nickname. Can you tell us a bit about Mama Azza and what Annis learns from her?
Azza is this spirit that takes on Annis's grandmother's visage, sort of the way that Annis's grandmother looks, because she encounters Annis's grandmother on a slave ship that is crossing the Atlantic, because Azza is a storm spirit, and that spirit is obsessed with the women of Annis's line. She's a complicated spirit. You know, she's not an angel, and she's not a demon either. She has her own wants and desires and motivations, and she lies sometimes, and other times she tells the truth, and sometimes she spares, and sometimes she neglects and damns. She's one of many spirits that exist in the world of the book. And it was important for me that those spirits were complicated and were complex and had the same kind of texture that the human beings do in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've said that if you're honest about the people that you love and the people that you care about, then you need your characters to live through the same things. So how did this affect you while you were writing Let Us Descend?
It was difficult. It was really difficult. I mean, I think I would come out of these sessions and it was hard to separate myself from the character and be fully present in this world. You know, I think that it was difficult. And I think that it meant that I saw this world differently. You know, there are things that I do, healthy things that I do to help me weather the stories that I tell, but I also do plenty of unhealthy things in order to cope.
I just want to clarify one thing you said to make sure I interpreted it properly. You said you saw this world differently. I think, were you talking about the real world or were you talking about the story world that you created?
Yeah, I'm talking about the real world. I mean, there's something to be said for moving through the landscape with the knowledge of what has come before in that landscape. So my dad has brothers, half-brothers who live in New Orleans. When I was in high school, he lived there for a couple of years and we would spend weekends with him and also be with him like during the summers for extended amounts of time. And I moved through that landscape and, you know, was in that place with him and with my family and saw the repercussions and like the long echo of American chattel slavery in the places where I was, where, you know, my dad, you know, he lived in these poor neighborhoods. This was in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, people struggling with substance addiction by sort of random acts of violence. And so I saw, you know, the long arm of slavery or the long echo of slavery in the place where I was, but I didn't have the key to understanding it because I didn't know the history. I didn't know about segregation or the fact that, you know, the people who lived in those places probably had ancestors who had been enslaved, you know, either in New Orleans or in the plantations along the Mississippi. And that was maybe part of the reason that they were mired in poverty. So there was just so much about that place that I couldn't see clearly and didn't have any tools to understand. And I think that immersing myself in Annis's world and living with Annis allowed me to see my world and understand my world differently. But at the same time, you know, I think it also helped me to understand, to not only see the world differently, but to see especially Black Americans and like my community and the place that I come from, to see us differently, you know, because all of that I said that I learned about resistance, I feel like it's still true.
Jesmine Ward, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Let Us Descend. It was an honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
Jesmine Ward is the author of the novel Let Us Descend. Find out more about Jesmine and her book at WPR.org/beta.
How do you have a fun journey of imagining yourself in these people's positions without ever forgetting who these people are and the lives that they ruined?
Coming up, writer-director Jake Lawford talks about his Netflix docuseries, How to Become a Mob Boss. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.